Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are here once again on this Sunday, very sunny London Sunday morning, actually, with very pure blue skies out my window. And we're going to be turning towards this incredible source that you've brought this time for us, Justin. And if you haven't joined us before, essentially one of us, we alternate the weeks of who chooses the source. One of us chooses and the other one gets with the program of whatever the source is, and we reflect for a couple of days. We post the source on a Friday on Facebook, and then when we come to Sunday, we've probably at least read it and had some thoughts and been impacted by it in some way, and then we talk about it and see where the conversation leads us, which is often very different than anything I've thought in the run-up to it as well. So Justin, thank you for choosing this really beautiful poem. And I don't know if you have this, Justin, but often I look at a source and I think, I'm sure we've done this one before. This is one of them. And I know we haven't, but it's like, I don't know what that is, like some kind of familiarity or something that makes me feel like we've had it before in our realms. And maybe we have in another space or something. But it's just really beautiful, and I'm grateful that you've brought it. So thank you.
The funny thing, Lizzie, is that yesterday, when I was not yesterday, Friday, Thursday, when I was looking for a source for this week, the opposite thing happened to me, which is I had a long list of sources I thought we didn't have that I'd been collecting over the week, and we'd used them all. So I kept on looking. Oh, we did that one 4.5 years ago, and that's the thing, I suppose, with having done this for so long. Is that there are, I don't think we've ever repeated one, or maybe once we repeated one. And that means that there are nearly 300 different sources. So it's quite hard to keep track. And I suppose this one is resonant of many others, because there's a one kind of conversation that we've been having here. And then there are many other kinds of conversations we've been having here as well. So I'm very glad to bring this. And it's written by someone whose work I really love. And thank you for being here so faithfully, Lizzie. It's I am really enjoying being part of a conversation that unfolds all of its own accord, and where it's designed only in the sense of having a practice for it and a structure for it, but not anything else. And it's very life-giving.
Can I just say as well, for anybody who was listening last week, please can you see that Vespa, I nearly called you Vespa, Justin. Justin's shelves are green and not blue. And I was convinced that they were still the blue of years ago.
Yeah, they were blue for 4 years and now they're green.
I love it. Anyway, I'm really grateful to see your shelves and to remember that they're green and not blue. So thank you.
So here we are. So you can always find the source if you're with us. You can find it in our Facebook group, which you're very willing to join. And this goes live in the Facebook group. You can find it in the notes for all the podcasts and YouTubes and all of that. It is always on our very lovely turningtowards.life website, which has all of the sources, and you can search there. And so there's a huge repository, not only of conversations, but also of poems and readings and quotes and things that might be very useful and life-giving in life. And if you go to turningtowards.life, you can also sign up for our weekly email, and then you'll get the source and the conversation in your inbox, if that's the way that you like to get things. And this is by Padraig Tuama, and it's called The Facts of Life. That you were born and you will die. That you will sometimes love enough and sometimes not. That you will lie, if only to yourself. That you will get tired. That you will learn most from the situations you did not choose. That there will be some things that move you more than you can say. That you will live. That you must be loved. That you will avoid questions most urgently in need of your attention. That you began as the fusion of a sperm and an egg of two people who were once strangers and may well still be. that life isn't fair, that life is sometimes good and sometimes better than good, that life is often not so good, that life is real, and if you can survive it well with love and art and meaning, given where meaning's scarce, that you will learn to live with regret, that you will learn to live with respect, that the structures that constrict you may not be permanently constraining, that you will probably be okay, that you must accept change before you die, but you will die anyway. So you might as well live, and you might as well love. You might as well love. You might as well love.
The facts of life. That you were born and you will die. That you will sometimes love enough and sometimes not. That you will lie, if only to yourself. That you will get tired. That you will learn most from the situations you didn't choose. That there will be some things that move you more than you can say. That you will live, that you must be loved. That you will avoid questions most urgently in need of your attention. That you began as the fusion of a sperm and an egg and of two people who were once strangers and may well still be. That life isn't fair, that life is sometimes good and sometimes better than good. That life is often not so good, that life is real and you can survive it well with love and art and meaning, given where meaning's scarce. That you will learn to live with regret, that you will learn to live with respect, that the structures that constrict you may not be permanently constraining, that you'll probably be okay, that you must accept change before you die, but you will die anyway. So you might as well live, and you might as well love. You might as well love. You might as well love.
Thank you, Lizzie. This is one of those sources where any one line that we pick could blow itself open into a huge world. So even if we have talked about this before, and even if we read it again, it's going to take us somewhere else, and that would be okay. And I'm very drawn this morning to the last verse. So given all of that, you might as well live and you might as well love. And I was feeling as you were writing, I could feel it in myself this morning, actually. I was saying to you, Lizzie, before we came on, that you know that I've come back from a trip yesterday because we had our gathering of the people from around the world who teach our coaching course, and I got to go and you were here. And so I've just come back on a plane and everything. And this morning, my desk is full of papers and all my packing, unpacking is all around the place, and nothing's in the right place where I used to it. So I'm feeling a little bit disoriented. And I noticed as I sat down here at my desk to speak to you, I have that very strong feeling that's very familiar to me, of the part of me that goes, this all has to get fixed up. Something is wrong. Something is bad is happening unless everything's in order and unless everything's right. And how in the midst of that, if I were to live from that part of me, which is quite an anxious part of me and really wants to be in control of things, it would be very easy for me to be here in this conversation with you, sort of in one way or another, caught up in a sort of denial of all of the things that this poem has to say, which is, it's all a great big mess. Most things will work out, many things won't. You're going to have to live in the middle of it anyway. And I could be here, and I have many times, not actually in this conversation with you, because it's in affordance with something else. It calls forth in me something much deeper and truer and realer. But it would be very easy to be in this conversation in a way of kind of trying to suspend life, like, I can't really be in this. And that would not only, in a way, not be living in it, but sort of living somewhere else, because this part of me gets pretty worked up. And it would also certainly be a way of not loving, because that aspect of me would much rather suspend everything real in order to get the pile of papers sorted or the right things in the right drawer, or, you know, find the thing that I lost on the bus that I've been trying to figure out where the cables for something that I had with me aren't with me now. It would be so easy to suspend all of that for this very precious half an hour here with you. And it would be so easy to suspend it actually for much longer than that, over the small things like my unpacking's a bit of a mess, and the big things like, I love this line because we were talking about this earlier as well, Lizzie, you will avoid questions most urgently in need of your attention, you know, because of all the things that I'm avoiding and putting off that I know need doing. So I'm really touched. It seems to me that the invitation here, that in the midst of all of the change, and that we'll die anyway, and what's not fair, and that things are sometimes good and sometimes not good, that there is a moment by moment choice that is available to us, which is to live in whatever we're living in and to love as fiercely and as best we can in the middle of whatever we're in, which is what I'm doing now, which is really, as I'm bringing my attention that way, feels deeply moving. I've got to have tears coming just to make that choice to go, I'm here with Lizzie, with you, Lizzie. And I think his language, Patrick's language, is so kind here. So I might as well live and I might as well love. Not you have to or something, but something really gentle, which is, am I willing to live in the mess of it? And am I willing to love being here with you, and to love you and to love me and to love this weird and chaotic and unpredictable life with all of its change? Or will I sort of suspend myself over the top of it, hoping for the moment that all of these questions get resolved, or just that my letters get opened and somebody deals with them, hopefully not me? I know which one I prefer. I know which one seems to have the most meaning in it. I know that I don't when I'm afraid. And that maybe part of the point of this poem is to remind us not to be afraid of that which being afraid makes no difference at all. I could be afraid of all the things that he's saying if I chose to be, or if I allowed myself to be. It's not all frightening, but some of it is. Or I could choose to live in the middle of it. And that choice is an ongoing act of remembering, because it's not like a one-time choice. Mm-hmm. I realize that I have to keep on remembering, and that also means I have to take care of all the very frightened parts of me as well, because if they were the ones that are in charge, I'd never get close.
Justin, gosh, it's, again, what's arising in response to this is so different than I could have imagined. And as you're talking, Justin, the thing that's coming to me, and as it is so often, like slightly on the edge of my capacity to talk about it, but all of the things that I get up to that are linked to one of these things being what I'm really afraid of, or what I'm not willing to face somehow. So, for example, that you were born and you will die. Sometimes I can feel the link between death and hanging on to things, for example. Like there's something in the hanging on to things that seems to be like a, I don't know, like a hue of denying that that's true. Like as if I hang on to this thing tight enough, I can pretend for a while that nothing's going anywhere, including me, including you. So if I hang on to this thing, somehow that fear doesn't have to be faced, or that problem doesn't have to get resolved, because it can't be anyway. But that, so there are things that I can see as you're talking that are really not separate from like really, really big themes in a human life. And yet we kind of wallow about in the really kind of mundane things as a way of avoiding the really, really big questions. And I'm suddenly feeling like a lot of compassion for all the ways that I'm avoiding things, because I can see the things I'm avoiding are tough to face. Like it's hard to, like even this line that you will get tired. Like I've had the whole thing, like all of my life, like I have to get enough sleep. And of course, with young children in the realms, that gets completely undone. And a huge part of me is completely amazed that I can even function at all with sometimes how little sleep I get. And it's quite incredible that the things that I feel afraid of are never as bad as I think they're going to be somehow. Like I'm there. It's like what I notice when I'm fearful of something, who I am and all my capacities and what I can be in the world seem completely separate from the situation I'm fantasizing about or catastrophizing about or worried about. And so somehow for me, the nature of my fear leaves me and in my essence, in my goodness, in my capability, in my resourcefulness, it leaves me completely out. So of course it's kind of devoid of any lightness or help or resourcefulness, because I've taken, somehow my fear takes me out of it and just projects everything terrible happening. So then when things do happen, like I do get tired or I have to be in a situation I didn't choose, and I don't really want to learn from that, thank you very much. Actually, when it happens, there I am too. So yes, it's painful. And yes, the thing I was afraid of came true, and here we are. But I'm here, and it's much less terrible than I thought it was going to be. But even as I say that, I'm like, oh, no, but there's going to be something else that it's not going to be okay. You know, there's like a kind of, maybe like a superstitious part of me that's like, oh my God, even though I've said that, or because I've said that, now something that I can't handle is going to befall me. And then that's going to be the example. So anyway, I have lots of trickery that goes on in me, but I love this feeling of being confronted by words that tell me what's really going on behind the things that I'm doing. So behind the kerfuffling about papers and needing things to be a certain way, to have a deep breath and think, well, what might I really be concerned about really, really? Because those papers can, well, they can either wait, or I can just sort them out with kind of nonchalance and take it in my stride. Like there's choices to be made there. But what's really happening with me that I could treat my life the way I'm treating it, especially when I'm not loving and I'm not living? What's really happening?
This sense that you're talking about, Lizzie, about the fearful imagining of a future event, a future experience, and then everything that you do to avoid then being in contact with the possibility of that future experience, or maybe with life itself at that moment in time. And so recognize that, and the bit that I that there was such a relief to hear you say, such a good reminder to me, and which I also think is true, is this, it's certainly true for me, the forgetfulness that you talk about. Like when I'm imagining a future thing that I'm frightened of, it somehow doesn't seem to have me in it and the capacities that I have to meet life, because so many things that I've been frightened of, when I meet them, they may be exactly not what I want. It may be something that I really didn't want to happen. Somebody dies, or something ends that I care about, or, you know, I'm stranded without my phone. The different scale of things that happen. And what I'm remembering from what you say and feeling my way into is that in the heart of all of the fear and all of the confusion and all of everything is something really solid in me, that is in all of us, that so often turns out that when that's what we're able to be in contact with, it allows us to meet the circumstance in a way that's different to the way that we'd imagined it. It's not as we'd imagined it. It may be the last thing we wanted. And I know that that's not always true, because any number of us have experienced traumas of all different kinds, and that seems to me that trauma is the effect of being in a circumstance where we don't find our capacity to meet it in some way. So I don't want to exclude that that's real. And at the same time, seeing that the sort of projections of the frightened parts of me will make almost anything into trauma, which isn't going to be. So I'm not making a claim that we can avoid trauma, any of us, or that anyone who's experienced trauma should have been able to avoid it, or anything. It's nothing like that, but it's more like what I'm hearing in you is there are parts of me that would like to make all of life into anticipated trauma, even the bits that are so beautifully written in this poem. I'm born and I will die. I was really struck by this, that I'll get tired, that there will be piles of things that I'm avoiding that urgently need my attention, that life's often not so good, and that there'll be regret, and that there'll be structures that constrict me, all of those. How much there is of us that is able to meet life when there's the grace to find that in ourselves. And it sort of has me wondering, maybe that's the function of a conversation like this. Exactly, the function of a conversation is that it's that which supports us in finding that in ourselves, which is able to stand in these other places, knowing that life is real, and that if we bring love and art and meaning to it, it's different from when we don't. And that we really might as well live and love in the midst of all of it, rather than suspend our lives to head off something that we imagine that we won't be able to meet, but we might well be able to meet. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me a little bit way, 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 way back in maybe in the first 10 or 20 weeks of this conversation, Lizzie, we read something by Frank Ostrzeski, which was the five somethings. I've got them on my wall, which starts with don't wait and welcome everything, push away nothing. Are we going to do that, or are we going to live not in the midst of our lives, because these things that are true are because we underestimate, that's I think the word, because we underestimate our capacity to meet life as it presents itself to us.
I'm really moved by the words that you said, something like maybe that's the function of these conversations, so that we can cultivate that of us which has capacity and is resourced, so that when we need those resources, they're filled in some way, that we have relationships, that we have had reflective time to know what moves us, that we might be supported by that when things are not okay, when that life is not is often not so good parts happen. And it makes me wonder about the kind of, about the gift of this kind of thing, where we're in a kind of contemplation that nourishes us, and which then becomes part of the scene when the scene is hard, or at least it could be reached for if it was needed. And how, you know, when I talk about my fears of what might happen and what might go wrong and how terrible it all might be, and there is also a presence, a sense of, oh, but I could ask this person for help, or I could find that in me which. And I guess I haven't really been seeing it in that way yet until you said that. As we sit here and we, of course, there's kerfuffles going on in our life when we sit here and do turning towards life. It's not like, but there's something about this time where I know I have the capacity because I love it and I want to do it and it's so meaningful to me that all manner of kerfuffle can be happening and I can find myself present and open. Like you said, it's an affordance for that, sitting with you and having this source here and feeling part of our community and that there are other people here with us. That container is a very supportive and strong one that enables this kind of reflection to happen. You know, I've often been really kind of wounded and hurt by people who say, oh, it's just navel gazing. And now I'm feeling really robust about my debate about that. Like something in this moment, I'm like, well, I mean, I don't really know what navel gazing is anyway, frankly. I'm just realizing in this moment, I mean, looking at your tummy, I guess, is what that means. But I don't know. I've never looked at my tummy very much. I feel like I know what it brings to a human life, to be reflective and to be in conversation about things that mean something and to face our fears together and to bring ourselves to the container of a safe and warm, kind relationship. And that what that gives us in a wider human life of complexity and systems and power dynamics and bonkersness and wounds and arguments and financial troubles and terrible separation and, you know, all of the things that could happen. And as you said, all the traumas that have happened to us are also there too, because I know the traumas that have been in my life. I've taken myself back to those places and I've brought myself as this person who's been filled up by contemplation and some stillness and some reflection and really beautiful relationship. I've taken myself back to those places to make that even safe in some respect, so that it's not as bad as it actually was, because I brought myself that's been filled up by all of this to that place too. So I'm feeling very robust about the people who cynically have said to me over the years, oh, all this navel gazing and talking. And I understand why one might say that. And I think it probably does come from some kind of fear and also a sense that maybe that we are avoiding questions that are most urgently in need of our intention. Like, I guess all of us know that at some level, no matter how conscious we are or no matter how many conversations we're having. There's so many things I'm avoiding in my life. I'm sure of it. And there's clearly a spectrum of avoidance in everything, isn't there? So I'm just feeling robust and understanding of the quality of this and what it brings to a human life, and really grateful that I didn't manage to. Well, the irony of it is when someone says to me, oh, you're just navel gazing, it doesn't stop me doing what I'm doing. You know what I mean? It's like, it's such a useless comment in a way, because well, I'm not going to like change all my life because you think I'm navel gazing, because that's not the kind of power that you have, really. So anyway, I'm just feeling glad and filled, and like there are capacities that get made here that really matter.
I don't really know what navel gazing really is. but it's not this. So as we come towards the end of this morning, there is one mode of talking, Lizzie, which is really important in the world, which is the conversations that move us into action on the things that matter. And this has not and isn't often, maybe has never been, this conversation, a conversation of action. Although there is lots of action in it, like that we do this and that we're here and that we show up and other people show up and something gets made and it gets shared very widely and other people share it with other people. There's lots of action in there. I'm feeling very appreciative as you're talking about the importance of conversations that nourish us and get us into contact with what is true and awaken our capacities and help the frightened parts of us to settle down so that they can meet life. And anything that awakens our capacity to survive life well with love and art and meaning, given where meaning's scarce, whatever anybody calls that conversation, and even though it doesn't build bridges or mow the lawn or change a baby's nappy, or this conversation doesn't do those things, it does something else that we deeply, deeply need in our lives, which is support us in the capacity to live and love in the midst of things. And the conversation about nourishment and healing and presence and contact and remembering ourselves, that conversation isn't widely valued in our wider culture, which is why we're doing it, and which is why for some people it might be any number of derogatory labels attached to it. And it seems extraordinarily important to me that as many of us who get the chance to talk, find others to talk with in this way, get the chance to do that, which I think is why we're doing this. I'm so grateful for your wisdom and your willingness to dive right in and for the endless surprises that come from this. And I have a funny feeling that we have read this before, even though I couldn't find it. And I'm sure that this is a completely different conversation to the one that we had last time this poem was here between us, if it was.
Yeah.
So I have had a secret project, a secret thought that we could just go back to, we could just start with all the sources again. We'd never have to find another one. We could just begin from the beginning and it would be fine.
Yeah.
That may not be our project for now. Thank you, Lizzie. Thank you, everyone, for being with us. Please. And know that you can be in contact with us. hello@turningtowards.life is a good way to email us, or Facebook. Please tell other people who you think would benefit and share this widely, because we want it to benefit people. And with a fair wind, we will be here again at 9 o'clock UK time next Sunday morning for our last Sunday in May 2023.
Thanks, Justin. Thank you, everyone.
Bye.